Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clayton Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 302. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clay. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is good. Good to be back for another episode. It still feels weird doing two episodes a week in season. Like, we were doing three in the off season, and it felt like we were doing it, like, every day. And, like,
right
now doing two, it just, I don't know, it feels different. It feels like we don't do it as, and I guess the time between the Wednesday and Sunday episodes a little longer, too, that we record Wednesday night to Sunday night. So, yeah, it's just, feels like it's been a little while, but it's good to be back.
I was literally just about to say the same thing. It feels like it's been a full week since we recorded, but it's only been a few days. But yeah, it's weird getting down to two after doing three for January through March for the most part. But still two a week and still plenty to talk about because the season has been absolutely crazy, as everyone knows, especially on the pitching side of things. But we get a lot of fun topics and players to talk about today. We'll do another edition of Three Up, Three Down. This will be like a new Monday episode staple going forward, and we'll alternate each week hitters and pitchers. We did hitters last week, so we'll do pitchers this week. Got a few prospect promotions, including one that just happened about 20 minutes before we came on to record this, and some other players that are starting hot or cold, breaking out. So good mix of stuff here, but before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. Make sure you check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty and Prospect rankings. And, of course, you got to check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. And we're actually doing a giveaway right now. We will be announcing the winners at noon Eastern time on Monday. So if you listen to this in the morning, still got time to get in celebration of our 300th episode. Last week, we're giving away three free premium subscriptions to RotoBaller, which is a great value. So many good content, tools in that premium subscription. So you just got to find our pinned tweet on the Toolshed at Toolshed Pod on Twitter in either comments or quote tweet with just your favorite ballpark you've ever been to, past, present, major leagues, minor leagues, it does not matter. So comment or quote tweet with that, and you'll be entered to win, and we will announce those middle of the day on Monday. And check out everything great going on over at RotoBaller as well. All right, Chris, we'll start off with a couple of struggling Blue Jays bats here with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette. Bo is currently hitting 208. Vlad is currently hitting 218. Both have slugs under 330 right now. Actually, under 340. Vlad's at 336. And even on Sunday, Vlad had two batted balls above 112 miles an hour, but they're both ground balls. They both went through for singles. Vlad is just not hitting the ball at ideal angles right now. You look at the sweet spot for Vlad, which is batted balls between, I believe it's 8 degrees and, between 8 degrees and 32 degrees. He is down about 9% from last year, 32.5% last year, down to 23.8% this year. Still hitting the ball hard, as he always has. Barrel rate's still above 10%. Hard hit rate's 52.5%, but the ground ball rate's too high. You get too many pop-ups as well. I mean, Chris, like, obviously the name is still huge in the fantasy world and dynasty, especially as Vlad's still only 25 years old, and he had that one massive season. But since then, he's been good but not great. At this point, should we stop holding out hope that he can return to being an elite fantasy producer and just accept him for what he's been the last couple of years?
That's what I'm wondering. I think that everybody holds the name value. When you look at Vlad, you think about the monster season that he had in 2021. You know, he hit 48 home runs that year. It was, you know, really awesome. But how much of that was attributed to where they play? If you go back to that 2021 season, they were playing in minor league parks for most of the year, and that was when most of the damage was done. And then you look, when they transitioned back, he was still hitting for power when they moved away and back to Toronto, but the numbers certainly ticked down if you look over the last few months of the season. Well, he still had 7 home runs in September that month and 6 the month before. Most of the damage was done when they were in minor league parks. Yeah, I think that at the end of the day, Vlad, the expectations are sky high. I will also say, I think it's very hard for a hitter to change their launch angle. When a guy's hit the ball on the ground for most of their career, they struggle to change it. If we just look at a list of like ground ball leaders for hitters, those guys are pretty much the same year over year. And we always say, this is the year that Vlad or Brian Hayes or you name it, whoever it is going to lift the ball more. And they never really do. So I'm becoming more and more of a believer that it is just very hard for hitters that hit the ball on the ground consistently to actually change that. And I think that might be the case here with Vlad Guerrero Jr., who, while he did see the ground ball rate tick down a little bit last year, it's back up to 52.5% on Savant. So that's based on launch angle. And that's obviously not good. He's been about 50% for his career. And then you mentioned there's pop-ups too. I think one of the batted balls he had today was a 75-degree launch angle. That's not good. That's a pop-up, and that's not going to do anything. So with Vlad, I just really worry that he may just be a really good player and not an elite player. I think everybody is holding out for him to jump back in and be this elite guy, but what does he have to do to get to that? Because you look, in the last 3 years, he still had really good barrel rates. Even after 2021, I mean, he's ran barrel rates of at least 10% every year. So I don't know. He's hit the ball hard. It's just that he doesn't hit the ball in the sweet spot all that often, as you mentioned. Launch angles can be deceiving. He has an 8-degree launch angle this season. He had 10.5-degree launch angle last season. But the sweet spot rates are bottom of the barrel bad. 6th percentile sweet spot rate this year. And he has a 90th percentile hard hit rate among all MLB hitters. So you see the translation. The results just aren't there. So yeah, I'm thinking Vlad's just a good player. I don't think Vlad's an elite player. And I'm not sure I can get back to that thinking, because I just think it's so hard for a hitter to lift the ball.
Yeah, and we're now at 6. This is Vlad's 6th season, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, that's where we're at with him. It's not like this is like his second year and he doesn't have a long track record of this. This is becoming a long track record of just not hitting the ball at ideal angles. And this year it's been even more than usual, with that sweet spot dropping down to easily a career worst mark so far. And yeah, he's got to be good. Obviously he's better than this. He's better than a 218 hitter. You know, he still hits the ball hard. Contact rates are still decent, but is he ever going to be more than like the last 2 years, 260, 270, around 30 home runs, give or take a couple either way? I think this is what he is. And I think that's more back end top 10 first baseman than a top 5 first baseman right now. But Chris, would you rather buy low on him right now? I don't even know if you can buy low on Vlad actually, but would you rather invest in a guy like Vlad Jr., or would you rather go out and try to invest in Bo Bichette, who's off to a really poor start, and his Savant page isn't even nearly as impressive as Vlad's is. He's down across the board, quality of contact by a lot. The last 3 years, Bo's been around a 9.5% barrel rate. This year it's 2.4. He's down 2 miles an hour in average EV and almost four if you go back to 2022. The hard hit rate is down 6% from last year, 11.5% from 2022. Rate's down. Sure, that's great. And the contact rate is still there. He's going to put the bat on the ball. He actually has the best zone contact, second best zone contact, and the best contact rate of his career right now at 90.1 and 81.5 respectively. But he's just not hitting the ball hard, and he's not running anymore. He does have three steals this year, but, you know, not a big part of his game anymore. I don't know. I've always loved Bo, but I don't know if I'm holding out hope in him being – is he just a back-end top 100 guy at this point? He's been top 25 in a lot of rankings, or at least top 40 still, top 50 this year. But is that even too high for a guy that's seeing his quality of contact drop off and a guy that's not going to hit for – to not going to steal a ton of bags? Is he an elite player anymore, Chris? I don't know.
Yeah, I've held out a lot of hope for him. And it just isn't there. So I look at this profile and I'm really confused. The hurt, it's odd to look at and see, how did Bo get here? Because, yeah, Bo had a great year in 2021 too, when Vlad also did, and we knock him both because they got to things better when they played in the minor league parks. They were hitter friendly. But at the same time, Bo was again good the next year. In 2022, Bo still hit 290 with 24 home runs. He stole 13 bags. And then last year, even though the power, again, took a step back, he probably would have been about the same home run total, considering he had 100 less plate appearances in 2023 than he did 2022, and just four less home runs. So the power was there, and he hit 306. Now, Bo stopped running, which is... other thing that's interesting, because the sprint speed's there, 69th percentile sprint speed, he can still run. I know that sprint speed's useless when looking at stolen bases, etc. You talk about a bad sweet spot rate with Vlad, 21.2% with Bo. It's not good at all. Not hitting the ball hard, his average EV is down 2 miles an hour, and that's down nearly 4 miles an hour from 2022. So what's going on here? Is Bo hurt? We're in a 2.4% barrel rate. And I'm not one just going to speculate and say that he's hurt, but I don't know. The stuff is really weird to look at. He can't hit breaking balls worth a flip this year. He's pounding the ball into the ground. Yeah, you know, I think that Bo just, either he's regressed or he's hurt. That's where I'm landing. Because you're right, he's making good contact, but the quality of contact is just horrifically bad. So I'm with you. I think he's, you know, he should be like a major faller for me, which sucks, but because I like the profile and I want him to succeed, but yeah, it's not been great.
Yeah, I was looking at the historical Razzball player raters rankings, and for shortstops in 2021, Bo was first, just ahead of Turner and Fernando Tatis Jr. back when he was still a shortstop. 2022, still good, was fifth. Last year was 13th, and he missed a little bit of time, but it's been like a steady kind of trending down for him. At this point, with the emergence of other names, I'm starting to wonder, is Bo even a top 10 shortstop anymore?
Yeah.
With the obviously, Elwie has broken out, Gunner. I kind of wonder, Abrams too. I'm going to do a quick sort here. I'm not sure if he's still a top 10 dynasty shortstop for me. And then we have Mookie Betts as well. So he's behind for me. Witt, Betts, Elwie, Gunner. I would put him behind Seager and Turner right now, even though they're not having great years. For dynasty, I have him ranked behind Jackson Holliday right now. Holiday's probably, let's take Holliday out because he's probably gonna be a second baseman. We'll take him back out. I have him behind. All right, so he's in a cluster right there with guys like Lindor, O'Neill Cruz, etc. He's still in that. Oh, CJ Abrams, he's behind. So yeah, he's in a cluster of 9 to 12 right now. Who do you like going forward, like him or Volpe, Chris? That's weird to even ask that question at this point, but I think it's a legit kind of debate at this point as well.
I think Volpe's breaking out, so I might lean Volpe. I know that Volpe's savant page and barrel and stat cast isn't great either, but the contact's what he needs, and the contact is what's been there. He's made major improvements with the contact rate. It's up 11% from last year. The zone contact's up 7%, so that's what Volpe needed more than anything. He already had the power and speed, so he's going to – obviously three home runs this year. He's going to get back to that, but Yeah, I think that I'm taking Volpe.
I don't know who I'm taking. This is very, very much a toss-up for me. Right now, I think my next rankings update will still have Bo ahead, but it's going to be very close. And obviously, Volpe's arrow is pointing up. Bo's is pointing down right now. So that might be the last time that I have Bo ahead. But, and maybe I won't even. I still got another few days before I post mine. Maybe I'll change my mind at that point. But all right, enough Vlad and Bo talk. Let's go over to some Joe Adell. I actually never thought we'd be talking Joe Adell ever again on the show. I thought he was going to go off into the sunset and be a minor league guy. But, hey, he's actually having a pretty solid season so far. It's a very small sample size, only 55 plate appearances. But so far, 3 home runs and 5 steals, 327, 382, 592 slash line, 14.3% barrel rate. He's cut the K rate almost in half from 40.3 to 21.6%. Chris, are we doing the Joe Adell thing again? Do you think there's any legitimacy to what we've seen from him so far this year?
I'm just afraid that it's all going to come crashing down again, because I feel like Adell's done this in the past where he is certainly going through stretches and it just comes back. I don't know. I'm looking at Adell. He's not making more contact. It's tough for me to evaluate this because it's, I sit here and lie to you. He is making more contact, actually. I don't know why. I looked at the whiff rate being not great, I guess, on the Savant slider, and I scrolled down. I'm like, oh, it's not great overall. It's still an improvement from last year.
It's hard to get lower than what he was.
That's fair point. So the contact rate is actually much improved. Like, we're talking from a 61.5% contact rate up to a 71.5% contact rate. So that's obviously a major improvement there. The zone contact rate is up to 80%, up from 72.6 last year. So yeah, that's notable. And I think that that's really important to see. He is chasing more. He's being more aggressive. And obviously that's a factor too. But if he's putting balls in play, then okay, like that's fine. Adell's always had the tools. He's hit the ball hard. He's ran respectable barrel rates for his entire career. And this year has a 14.3% barrel rate. Albeit it's just 5 total barrels. So it's a small sample that we're talking about here. But I do think that it is worth monitoring because he is putting out results. I'm deathly afraid that he goes back to striking out 30% of the time. But I think you ride it while you can. What are you going to get if you sell high on Adell? Probably not all that much. So I would just ride it out and hope that it's legitimate. And if it is, then his stock's really going to soar. If this kind of performance sticks for 2 months, then I think people are going to be talking about him as a top 100 dynasty asset, given the pedigree that he once had. Now, is that legitimate or not? Yeah, I don't know, but we'll see if it can stick. I'm skeptical. I don't want to believe, but things do look much better and much improved. So you have to at least say, okay, I think there might be something here.
Yeah, there's been some improvements. They're tangible improvements, but will they stick? That's the big question mark here. I am skeptical as well. I've seen Joe Adell several times. I've seen him take batting practice. Like, the raw power is massive. Obviously, he's a phenomenal athlete. He's probably one of the best athletes in baseball. Strength, speed, athleticism, one of the best athletes in baseball. No doubt about it in my mind, but that all means jack squat if you can't make contact and if you're striking out a million times like he has been. Last year was 40.3%, so can't really get much worse than that. But, you know, seeing him cut that in half, seeing those contact rates go up several percentage points, 7.5% on zone and 10% overall, like Chris said, they're still not great, but they're better. They're serviceable for him at this point. So I would buy in deeper leagues. I wouldn't pay a lot to get him right now, just because I want to see more, and I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop before I really invest more heavily in dynasty leagues. And a couple other hitters here that are off to really good starts and two very different players, Alec Bohm and Stephen Kwan. We'll start with Alec Bohm, who I didn't realize until Chris mentioned him as a player to talk about tonight. He's hitting 365 right now, 4 home runs, even has a steal, 441 OBP. And a 615 slug so far this season. Bohm I thought he was just going to settle in what he has been the last few years. Like a solid corner infield bat, but never really getting up to a guy that you'd have as like your starter at the corners. But Chris, is that maybe the case this year? He's been decent the last couple of years, 280, 274, had 20 bombs last year. Do you think that there's another level for him? Or do you think this is really just a hot streak and he's still what we've seen from him the last couple of years?
Under the hood, everything looks pretty similar. But I will say that I think that there has been there's been another gear that we've been waiting on. Just from the standpoint that he's always put up pretty good underlying data. He has the projectable frame that you're like, all right, he can get to power. He never really does. I will say he is barreling the ball up a little more, which is notable. You look under the hood, okay, everything's the same ground ball, fly ball, line drive rate. That means he's hitting the ball a little harder when he's putting it in that sweet spot range, which is really good. And the contact is very solid. And while Bohm's always been a very high contact guy, he now has a 91% zone contact rate and a pretty impressive 86% overall contact rate. So the jump in those numbers is notable, and both those marks are very good. So I think that Bohm has the potential, given the fact that he makes contact, he puts a lot of balls into play. How flashy can he be? How good can he be? Last year, hit 20 home runs, stole 4 bases across 611 plate appearances. I don't see a reason why we couldn't get to 25 home runs. And with the kind of contact he makes, it's not a real possibility it's 285 plus. I mean, he hit 274 last year, hitting 359 right now. Obviously not sustainable, but I do think that there's potential that he could hit 285 or better, and I wouldn't be shocked at all.
Yeah, I think there's, I won't say another full level for him, maybe like another mini level of sorts where he gets up to being like 285 and 25. I don't see him really advancing past that. I don't see 30 plus home runs out of him. I don't see him hitting 300 or anything like that. But I do think that Bohm is a solid hitter. We've seen that from him. He's 281 career hitter, and now his fifth season in the major leagues, and he's in a good lineup, good ballpark. That'll always help. So I think he can maybe get the back end starter status, but I wouldn't be expecting him to all of a sudden jump up to like top five status or anything like that. But I'm not looking to sell either. I'll just hold and ride it out because I don't think the perceived value has risen enough to the point where you can really call it a sell high Bohm right now. But this next guy with Stephen Kwan, I am not. He has 3 home runs so far, but the hard hit rate's even lower than it has been. Average exit velocity is 84.5 miles an hour. Hard hit rate 16.7%. Somehow he has 3 home runs. I'm not sure really sure how that happened, but I don't know. Kwan's a weird one. He's something like Luis Arraez, where it's like, all right, the average is going to be great. You know, he's running a 96% zone contact, 92.5% overall contact. Those are both absolutely elite. So you know that the average is going to be really good. And I think that 268 we saw from him last year was an anomaly. I think he's going to be a 300+. He's 298 his rookie year, 339 so far this year. He'll steal you 15 to 20 bags as he has the last 2 years, but I'm not a believer in this power, even though it's claiming that he has the same number of home runs as Julio Rodriguez, Ronald Acuna, and Corbin Carroll combined right now. But I don't really see any reason to expect Kwan to take a step forward in the power department. But what about you, Chris?
Yeah, it might just be fluky here. You look and you want to see some improvements under the hood. Actually, his average EV is down 1.4 miles an hour from last year. So that's obviously not what you want to see. The product of the home runs is just more sweet spot hits, actually. He's running a solid 40.2% sweet spot rate, and that has led to the barrel rate being up to 3.9%, which is very bad, but he had a 1.1% barrel rate last year. So we're talking a pretty sizable improvement there, but a 16.7% hard hit rate is the worst in the league. So no, I think Kwan probably just goes back to being that heavy contact hitter who's going to hit for good average. Last year's batting average was probably a complete fluke of 268. He's going to hit near 300 again due to the elite contact, the fact that he's hitting more line drives now. He's seeing the ball in the sweet spot more often. I think that's just going to see that number rise up. So Yeah, I'm not buying into Kwan's power, but I do think Kwan has his values for sure, especially in a points league where he is a great asset.
He absolutely is there. All right, two pitchers off to hot starts this year that we haven't, I don't think we've talked about these guys much at all. We have Eric Fede with the White Sox, who just swept the Rays for some odd reason, and Shota Imanaga with the Cubs. So two Chicago guys here. So far, Eric Fede, six starts, 2.60 ERA, 1.07 whip, 8.2% walk rate, and a 27.3% K rate. Over for Imanaga in five starts for him, 0.98 ERA, is 0.80 whip, a tiny 2.8% walk rate, 25.9% strikeout rate. I have Imanaga in a couple of leagues, none of Fede, so can't capitalize on him, but Imanaga's been absolutely money so far. He had that scoreless streak to start his career, and again, still has an ERA under one. Already has four wins, too, for the Cubs, 4-0 so far, and right around a strikeout per inning. Chris, both these guys are not exactly young. Imanaga's 30, Fede's 31. How are you valuing these two guys, given their age, given what we know from them in the past and what we've seen so far this year? How are you valuing them for Dynasty right now?
I really thought that Eric Fede was a massive sell. He looks all right all of a sudden. And yeah, I'm not sure whether I want to buy in because I feel like it just all could come crashing back down. Another good start against the Rays, you mentioned 8 1/3 innings. That's obviously awesome to see. Struck out 9, allowed just 2 earned runs. It's interesting because this was the first team out of the division that he had faced so far. He's faced the Tigers, Royals, Guardians, Royals, and Twins. Rays first time out of division. Just weird how that lined up. But over his last at least 3 starts, been rather good. Last 3 starts, a total of 3 earned runs, 25 strikeouts. That's pretty solid performance. The ERA keeps going down. Yeah, I like to see that. He has not walked anybody in the last 2 starts. I don't know. I still struggle to buy into Fede, but he actually looks like he might be pretty serviceable. I'm afraid that when he faces a team with a little more firepower on offense, that he might get beat up. He's not, surprisingly, like, here's my issue. I look at the profile. It's like, all right, his sinker is the highest whiff rate pitch of any pitch, which is bizarre because the sinker is a pitch to contact pitch, has a 31% whiff rate, and none of his secondaries are missing bats at a high rate at all. So that's why I'm a little bit concerned with Eric Fede. It's like, all right, who are you, man? I don't know. I don't know if I believe or not. I'm still leaning more not, but he's trying his best to prove me wrong here. But you mentioned Shota Imanaga. I fully buy what he's doing. Maybe not to this extent, but he's really good. Talk about his secondaries. They are very good in the splitter and the sweeper, both missing bats, both looking very good. I like Imanaga a lot, and a lot more than Eric Fede, for sure.
Yeah, I definitely would be more willing to invest in Imanaga right now. Obviously, he's not going to be an ace, even though he has the AGA that Nick Pollock loves. The ace is going to ace in his name. But I think he's more of a – I could see him selling as like a top 30 to 40 guy, like a good SP3, maybe even a back end SP2. Maybe he's a guy that's always undervalued a bit, like Justin Steele has been, and one of his rotation mates there in Chicago. But we know has a high floor. He's a guy that has very good command and control. I mentioned that tiny 2.8% walk rate so far. You know, four-seam split, sweeper, curveball. Really relies on that four-seam and split heavily. You know, about 87% combined usage rate on those. Four-seamer is only has a 115 batting average against. Splitter has a whiff rate over 42%. Yeah, so I think he's a legit like top 30 to 40 starter moving forward. Fede, I'm not quite as, you know, optimistic on, but he doesn't really have a big whiff rate offering. His highest whiff rate on any single pitch is actually a sinker, which you don't usually see. And that's at 30.9%. And I just don't trust the White Sox whatsoever with anybody, really. He can be viable, like Chris said, absolutely. But I'm not expecting him to be, like, I wouldn't put him on Imanaga's level. I won't even say top 50 on moving forward. I'd maybe say top 60 to 70, maybe 75, somewhere in that range. SP5, 6, depending on your league depth. So, yeah, Fede is more of a sell high for me right now. And Imanaga as a hold, I wouldn't sell high in Imanaga unless you get really good returns. I think he is pretty legit for the most part. But Fede, I'm not as encouraged by. All right, few prospect promotions here. We'll start with the one that was just announced earlier on Sunday evening, right before we came on. That's Joey Lobrefido being called up by the Houston Astros, thankfully, because Jose Abreu is still under 100 at 0.099. Completely forgot how to hit again. Even worse than last year's beginning of the season for him. Meanwhile, Lobrefido cranked his 13th home run of the season for Triple-A Sugarland on Sunday. Yeah, Chris, the K rate has been pretty high, but he did have a 6-strikeout game a few weeks ago, which probably the worst game of his absolute career or even his life. But the power is big here. There's some speed. He had 27 steals last year, 32 year before that. It was when he caught 4 times last year, so pretty efficient. Can draw walks. So, yeah, the K rate is going to be a little bit higher. But contact rates aren't terrible here. And given everything else he brings, and maybe even some dual eligibility, outfield and first base, this is a really fun fantasy player that I think everyone, if you're in redraft, I would add him, put a lot of fab down, whatever. And Dynasty, obviously, he should already be rostered, but I feel like he's still undervalued in Dynasty Leagues because I put out Dynasty Duel about a week or so ago from the Toolshed account, him and Kierstad, and many people didn't just say they would take Kierstad, but said it wasn't even close, which I very much disagree with. I actually have Lupfield ranked higher. I think there's more upside here. And, yeah, I'm very much all in on – not all in, but I'm very much in on Lupfield right now.
Yeah, I think people just look at the strikeout rate and assume that, oh, he's going to strike out way too much, which, yeah, I think Lupfield is always going to have strikeouts as part of his game. But his contact rates are pretty respectable. I do want to caveat with the fact that the ABS system does a lot of weird things in AAA. So you look, okay, he takes a lot of strikes, but there's some kind of calls where, you know, sometimes hitters feel like they know better than the zone, and the zone has changed every year that they've used it, which also has an effect. Like Lobrefido, yeah, you look at the profile, he's had a history of strikeouts, especially when he was promoted up to AAA. Last year. Prior to that, he ran pretty good rates in the lower levels of the minors. Obviously, AAA pitching is much harder, much more advanced. Major league pitching, going to be much more advanced. And you look at the strikeout rate right now, it's 31% on the year. That's high. But I will say he had a 6-strikeout game, and that has a big effect. And we're not obviously going to play the game of if we remove that, then you know, here's the number. But Lobrefido's contact rates, I've put out there, I put a rolling chart of his contact rates, and they've been steady. He had that 6-strikeout game like the 3rd game of the year, I think. And since then, he's been really good making contact, good enough numbers to excel in the majors. He's got the versatility too, which helps. You're going to have power. You're going to have speed. I don't know what the Astros plan to do with him, but there's a real possibility that, you know, he could be first and outfield. He may even get some second base time. We'll see. There is the versatility here, which does help Lobrefido a lot. So now I think that Lobrefido, there's still major question marks from a lot of people, but I think Lobrefido is going to be a really good player. And yeah, he may have some struggles out of the gate, but I think still he's going to provide you a lot that you own on your fantasy team.
For sure. Now, leading into the other guy that called up this week, Heston Kierstad, who would you rather have moving forward, Chris? Kierstad, I think you can make a pretty decent case. He's a better pure hitter and maybe even has a little bit more raw power, though I think that's close. But Lobrefido also adds speed, which Kierstad does not. No, they're both going to be good lineups, good ballparks there in Houston and Baltimore, respectively. Who would you rather invest in? Let's go 3 years from now. Who's the better dynasty asset between these two?
Yeah, I don't want to be short-sighted because, like, Kierstad's not playing consistently right now, which is really annoying that we call him up and he's started one game. What are we doing? I don't want to be short-sighted in that sense where it's like, all right, I think that's the long-term look. I think that, honestly, I think that Lo Profito has a little bit more juice, and he has the speed element you're not going to get from Kerstad. I think Kerstad does make a little more contact, especially pitches in the zone. He runs solid contact rates, and so I give him the edge there. Yeah, it's one of those things where you look at the profile and you, what do you want? You're going to get power from Kerstad, and you know that. You're going to get power from Lo Profito. Do you want to take the chance that Kerstad makes better contact? Yeah, possibly. I could go either way. You also have the fact that Lo Profito is a little more versatile too, and he can play all over the board. And Kerstad's, I think, a little more one-dimensional. He may end up playing more DH than outfield. We'll see how that all shakes out. But at the end of the day, both bats, really strong. I think that a lot of answers to that poll was, oh, it's not even close, like Kerstad by a mile kind of thing. And I think it's a lot closer than people want to admit.
Yeah, that's what I was shocked by. If you want to take Kerstad, fine. I won't fault you for it. I think they're pretty close. But by a mile is, it's just not right. It's, no, not even remotely close to being right. I'm sorry, but, you know, people are just really sleeping on Lo Profito, and I think people are going to, you know, realize that soon. I'm not saying he's going to set the world on fire right away. So obviously, we never know with prospects, but you know, he is very underrated, and I have him ranked higher. I have had him ranked higher for probably the better part of a year now, and I've always been, you know, pretty high on Kerstad too. But yeah, I think you have that little bit extra element of upside that Kerstad doesn't have, so I would lean towards Lo Profito moving forward. Last promotion here up in Toronto, Addison Barger, who has not been good so far at all, hasn't even recorded his first hit yet in his first few games, has been another guy that's been pretty undervalued for the better part of the last couple of years. Now, this year was hitting .314 in 19 games with Triple A Buffalo, 10 doubles and 3 home runs, almost as many walks as strikeouts, 14 to 15. Now, last year did fall off a decent amount, but you know, the line at the surface was not indicative of the player he is. And who knows where he fits in long term. But Barger's still pretty undervalued, Chris. But just how good do you think he can be for fantasy purposes long term?
I like Barger a lot. I'm not concerned with his three games that he hadn't got a hit yet. I'm actually adding him in AL labor because I desperately need a shortstop in the AL-only league. I'm right now, Daryl Hernise is my shortstop. So Addison Barger is getting the ad there. Hopefully I get him, but you'll know by the time you listen to this. And I think that Barger brings a lot to the table, actually. He brings versatility throughout the infield, and he's playing outfield, and he has some pop. It's really underrated. I think that Barger is going to be actually a really good asset long-term, and I'm not sure that people really have given him the love that he deserves. I'd rather in. I'm excited about the outlook and potential. And I think that he could be a spark that Toronto needs. We mentioned some other guys, Bo or Vlad, they're struggling. They could use a spark in here. Maybe it's Orelbus, maybe it's Barger, maybe it's both. But Barger is up right now. I'm looking to add him where I can, especially if you need a shortstop or you need some versatility. Like, I'm all about grabbing him, seeing where it goes. He'll get on track. 0 for 11, who cares? It's three games. Like, he's going to get on track and be fine. So, yeah, I'm a big Addison Barger fan. He's a top 100 prospect for me and has been for a while. I just feel like he's just flown under the radar because he's a little older. The dude just performs. He's really good.
Yeah, I'm not quite as high on him as you are, but I do think he's been slept on a bit. I've had him, he's been consistently like in the 120 range for me. So, again, a bit lower than Chris has him, but I do think he could be a decent fantasy bat moving forward. We'll just see how Toronto uses him, how short the leash is. If he doesn't get it going here, we shall see. They need something, some spark in that lineup. And you know, they're one of the worst lineups in baseball, despite having a 1-3 of Springer, Vlad, and Bo, all of them hitting under .220. So they need something. Maybe a Relvis gets called up soon. We'll see. But yeah, Barger, I think, is going to be a decent player long term. All right, let's finish off the show with three up, three down. Pitchers this week, starting with one of the many good pitchers in the Atlanta Braves system, Owen Murphy, 2022 first round pick, 20th overall, in four starts this year for High A Rome. 24 innings, only allowed 9 hits, 3 earned runs, 6 walks to 37 strikeouts. That equates to a 6.7% walk rate and a beautiful 41.6% strikeout rates. How high do you think he's going to rise in your rankings, Chris? Do you think, not right now, I don't think he's top 10 pitcher prospect right now, but do you think that potential ranking is a possibility for him by the end of the season?
Yeah, I believe so. He's been really good. He's made some notable changes. I talked to a couple scouts this week that had seen him. I won't see Murphy until last week of May, which I'm just praying that our baby's due June 3rd. So I'm praying I get to see him before the baby comes, because I'm a little scared because that series runs right up until the due date. He's been really good, obviously, on the surface. Like, you look at the numbers and you're like, all right, like, this dude looks like he's legit. And the numbers are good. But I think there's a lot more to it with Owen Murphy, the fact that he's added a tick to his fastball that was, you know, low 90s last year. It was 90, 92 when I saw him live last year. And it was unimpressive. He's a smaller guy. It's like, all right, is he going to get to be low? But now he has seen the tick up. He's IVB on it's absurd, like 20 inches of IVB from a very low release height. It's an outlier release height with that kind of IVB. Like, I think that Murphy's fastball is really good. You throw the breaking balls in there, he's got a really solid slider. He'll throw the curveball as well to differentiate the two between the vertical movements. I think that, you know, the command's been also an impressive step forward too. When you look at the strike rates, the walk rates, like, you know, those have been impressive steps forward. And I think that there's actually legit change in this profile, and I'm fully buying what Owen Murphy's doing. I actually wouldn't be shocked if he's in Double A by June. Like, I may not even get to see him in this series in Greenville, because the Braves get aggressive. And yeah, I just wouldn't be shocked to see them get aggressive here. Owen Murphy is 20 years old and 7 months. For reference, AJ Smith-Shawver was younger than that last year when they pushed him to the big leagues. So if that tells you anything, they're not afraid to be aggressive. And I think they could get aggressive here with Owen Murphy, see what you got, and see if he can handle the bump to Double A with the stuff that he's shown. So, no, I'm not going to be shocked at all when Owen Murphy's up in the next month. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm fully buying top 100 prospect. I think he could be a top 10 prospect with time too.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to mention that. I was like, I don't even know if you'll have a chance to, not because of the baby, but because is he still there at this point? He had a few starts there down the stretch last year, so he's up to 7 starts total. And yeah, that's still not a lot. And yeah, he's still young, but if he's pitching like this, done a few starts, yeah, I can see him getting the bump to Double A. And yeah, I think the upside is back end number 2 starter in the major leagues, maybe a potential top 50 fantasy arm. I think he's going to be in that top 10 SP prospect discussion pretty damn soon. And I think he's already inching his way towards that. It's a big glob of names there. He's probably in the back end of that glob, but you know, not top 10 yet, but that could change pretty soon. We get some promotions here. Players are going down left and right with injury. Who knows? But yeah, Murphy is definitely trending up right now. Good 3-pitch mix. He's very advanced for his age as well. Doesn't walk a lot of guys. Can miss bats. He kind of checks off all the boxes you look for. And a guy that could be a top 10 pitching prospect. So yeah, I'm definitely going to bump him up a good amount in my upcoming prospect rankings update. On the other side, though, another young, exciting pitching prospect that is not doing so well to start the season. Our first down this episode is Chase Petty. There's a lot of buzz on Petty. There always has been, but especially this offseason, where he's, you know, he's adding velocity back up to where he was a year or two ago, which was exciting to see. But the walk rate's gone up, K rate's gone down. His ERA of 9.56. It's only 4 starts, so not time to, you know, push that panic button yet, or even close to it. The hype justified, do you think, Chris? The upside here is a potential tier 2 pitching prospect. It's something that exists, but maybe the hype was a little bit overblown this offseason.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where this goes moving forward, because I was really in on Chase Petty and had really high expectations for him after the stuff improvements this spring. But so far, it's not been there. The command is completely gone. He's giving up a ton of hard contact, a ton of runs, and he's still not striking guys out at a high rate. So we're talking about 21% strikeout rate, and he's seen the walk rate jump significantly to 11.1%. Getting hit hard, as I mentioned, the batting average against 352 is not great. So yeah, Chase Petty, it needs to show something over the next couple of starts. I'm willing to give him a bit of a pass. Just I want to see a little more, but I need to see a little more pretty soon rather than just sitting around and waiting for it to happen, because you know, right now hasn't looked good at all.
Yeah, I'm still very in on Petty. I have dropped him a little bit in my rankings. I think I had him, it was either number 10 overall for pitching prospects or 11 or 12. He was right in that range going into the season. Still very high in him. Still think there's a lot of upside there. But yeah, I'm not pushing the panic button yet. I'm not like doing a drastic drop down the rankings, because I still think there's a very good pitcher to be had here. But yeah, I want to see him start making those strides right now, sooner rather than later. But one quick thing I wanted to point out here, if you go to his baseball reference page, we both mentioned that his K rate has dropped this year. You might look at it like, oh, his K per nine went from 8.7 to 9.6. This is why you shouldn't look at K per nine. Just yes. Saying, because his K rate has dropped about 3% from 24 to 21%. And the only reason why his K per nine has gone up is he's letting so many guys on base, so that he's faced a lot more batters. And yeah, you see, he still has, you know, 17 Ks in 16 innings, but he's also facing over five batters per inning. So that just shows you, don't look at K per nine. That's not good. Look at K percentage. Just divide strikeouts by batter's face. Boom, there's your percentage right there. Much better indicator. Same thing with walks per nine versus walk rate. Those are much better. The percentage ones are much better indicators of a pitcher's true talent and ability in that particular category. But enough rambling. Second up here, we got Cade Povich up in AAA. Everyone looks at all the big hitters there, which they absolutely should, with all the fun names that have gone through in AAA Norfolk this year. But Cade Povich has had a very good season so far. In five starts, he's only allowed 3 runs in 26 and a third innings. That's a 1.03 ERA. WHIP is 0.76. He's striking out everybody right now, 41.7% strikeout rate. And walk rate still a little high, always has been, but it's down to 10.4% this year after being 12% last year. So step in the right direction there. And he's probably maybe even the next one in line. They do have John Means coming back, Kyle Bradish coming back. So I don't know. That doesn't really help his case, but it looks like Povich is ready. He's knocking on the door and, you know, could be, given the strikeout upside that's always been there, could be a pretty solid fantasy arm.
I think so too. Povich really impressed me. I'd seen both last year when Norfolk pitched in Gwinnett, and I was Team McDermott at the time. I saw both in spring training this year, and I was like, okay, maybe I'm Team Povich now, because Povich was really good, and Povich has been stellar across the board. He's had a couple outings where the walks got to him, but overall, you can't argue with the performance and what he's done. He had that 4-walk outing, but other than that, he's kept the walks in check for the most part. He's got good stuff, good fastball with ride. The curveball is like 60-plus inches of vertical drop. He's got changeup with good fade. And overall, the command and strike throwing is really good. So Povich, it's probably a matter of time, like when he's pitching in Baltimore. The issue is they've got a couple other guys coming back, and Kyle Bradish and John Means as well will be back. Both those guys will be back this week. So that rotation gets really crowded, considering you have Albert Suarez, who's also pitched well. You have Cole Irvin, who's pitched well. You have Dean Kremer, who's even been pretty decent himself. So it's like, all right, how do all these guys fit? Obviously, G-Rod's not coming out. Corbin Burnes isn't coming out. So you have the other two guys coming back. It's hard to see a fit for Cade Povich, but he needs a shot in the majors. We need to see what he can do at this point. We're looking at a 24-year-old. Well, it's not old. He made it AAA last year. he's obviously in AAA this year and dominating. I think that Povich needs a shot in this rotation sooner than later. And I think that he probably does get the first crack when there's an opening. You obviously have Means, who hasn't been the best, you know, health track record. And I don't know. I think that he deserves a shot for sure.
You know who's not going to get a shot anytime soon? Chase McDermott.
Nope.
Who currently has 23 walks in 21 and a third innings.
Yep.
In AAA. Somehow also has a 380 ERA. I don't know how he's pulling that off with over a walk per inning, but
that's wild.
But hey, so okay, so look at the 380 ERA with a 192 whip. Those don't usually coincide with each other. Usually 192 whip means like 6+ ERA, but that's how fluky ERA can be. That just shows you right there. But yeah, McDermott, yeah, he's a bullpen arm. I don't know why they're even still trying to make him a starter without the depth they already have. Move him to the bullpen. I don't know what they're doing, but he's not the next down. We have a pair of Atlanta Braves, a lot of Atlanta Braves pitching prospects here. Maybe these two get passed by Owen Murphy sooner rather than later. Not saying I'm down on either of these two, but Adrish Meshavar and Hurston Waldrop have both had difficult starts to the season, starting with Adrish Meshavar and 4 starts for AAA Gwinnett, 7.11 ERA, 16 strikeouts, 8 walks in 12 and two-thirds innings. Whip is 1.58. As for Waldrop, who is one level lower down in AA Mississippi, 5.68 ERA through his first 4 starts, 17 strikeouts to 10 walks, whip of 1.90. Any concern here for you, Chris? Maybe we went too high with Waldrop, given he still has some command and control issues, even though the stuff is really good that we saw in spring training. But what are your thoughts here on these two arms?
AJ, I think that he's working through some things there, trying to change a couple things in the arsenal just to hopefully get him back to major league ready and consistently good major league ready as a starter. As I mentioned earlier in the show, rushed him to the majors as a 20-year-old last year. Put him in a bad spot in the playoffs against the Phillies, honestly. Didn't love that. I think that they had some desperate measures when they had lost some arms, and not that AJ Smith-Shawver wasn't ready, but for a guy to go from high A to the majors in the matter of 2 months, that's a big jump. And you look, and the overall lines this year, not good. He's also working with some different stuff, like the fastball's way up. The fastball's playing a lot different than it has. And so trying to figure out, okay, so how do I make this work? And there's been some bumps in the road, especially when we look at, he's allowed some home runs, and that's obviously hurt him. He faced Norfolk this week, and he did allow 2 home runs, 3 earned runs, but he did strike out 7, which was encouraging, just 4 hits allowed. So there's been some strides. Last week he was good too. He pitched 4 2/3 with just 1 earned run. I think that things are going to come around for AJ Smith-Shawver, but I do think this is just sense of, it's a 21-year-old that's not showing linear improvement. That's the name of the game. It's like prospects are going to be up and down. There's going to be bumps in the road. With Waldrop, I still think there's a little bit more that we need to see. It's still a really small sample, and it's heavily inflated by his first start, which he allowed 7 earned runs in 2 2/3, because his last 2 starts have both been 6 innings with 1 earn each start, which is good. So the results have been getting better. I'm not that worried about Waldrop. That's not to say I don't think Waldrop's ready. I think Waldrop still needs some more refinement, but I think Waldrop is going to get there. And that's why he's in AA. I think everybody expects him to be in AAA and, you know, be up really soon. But at the end of the day, I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done with Waldrop's arm, and he's going to be fine long term.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Chris. 5 years from now, rank these three arms. So we just talked about Owen Murphy, Smith-Shawver, and Waldrop. Rank.
I'm going to go Owen Murphy 1, which is why, and I don't think that's recency bias. I think that Owen Murphy strike throwing ability gives him the best chance to stick as a starter. The stuff is good too, and he's very young in his development. So I'm going to go with Murphy 1. I'm going to go with Waldrop 2, because I think the stuff's a little bit better, and AJ 3. And that's not an insult on AJ at all, but I think that, you know, if Waldrop figures out the command a little bit, the stuff's just so nasty. And I think that Murphy just has the best chance to be a starting pitcher long term.
That's fair. And do you think both Waldrop and Smyshava are starters long term still? Give me bullpen risk percent for both of them.
50-50 on Waldrop and 70-30 on AJ.
70-30 that he'll be a starter?
Yeah, I'm 70% confident AJ's a starter.
Gotcha. Okay,
and that's what I thought. Waldrop is just a coin toss, honestly.
Yeah, he's going to be really good, just in what role. That's the question that remains. All right, one more up, one more down. Let's go to Colorado, shall we? And Chase Dolander, who threw his first three starts of the year, 15 in the third innings, giving up 5 runs, 5 walks, 27 strikeouts. He's almost striking out half the batters he's faced so far, 44.3%. I mean, with Dolander, I like Dolander a lot. If he was literally in any other organization in baseball, he would be probably a top 150 overall prospect right now. Maybe even closer to 100 than 150. Heck, maybe he'll even be top 100 soon if he was in any other team. But he's not. He's in Colorado. And I don't think they're going to get rid of him anytime soon because they need – this is the way they need to build a pitching staff. They're not going to get any notable free agent arm to sign there. And they either have to trade for them or draft and develop them. And this is one of the better talents they've drafted in several years now. So they're going to try to make him a guy that can go up near the top of their rotation in a couple of years. So that sucks for fantasy. Maybe can he be good enough, Chris, to be at least a serviceable fantasy arm? In Colorado, we're never talking about an impact fantasy arm. That's happened, what, twice? That little stretch we had from Ubaldo Jimenez a decade ago, and maybe Mike Hampton at points in his career, but that's really it. Or maybe Germán Márquez.
Yeah.
But was he ever an impact arm, though? Maybe a little bit here and there. But, again, it's very sporadic that we get an impact arm in Colorado. So I'm not saying Dolander can be that, but you know, the stuff here is good. We saw him be one of the better collegiate pitchers, you know, when he was at Tennessee. Did fall off a little bit his last year on campus, but still very talented and off to a pretty good start to the season.
Yeah, so I think that Dolander is going to be the guy that they hit on. You look at the Rockies drafts year over year, and yeah, they have taken pitchers, but they haven't taken a pitcher of Chase Dolander's talent in quite some time. They took Gabriel Hughes 10th overall. That was in 2022, if I'm not mistaken. But Hughes was not anywhere near the talent level of Dolander. You go back, look at the other arms they've taken in the first round. Ryan Rollison took Robert Tyler with two first names out of the University of Georgia. Riley Pint is probably the highest upside guy they've taken.
I was just going to mention him.
Yeah. Then you go back and you look at Kyle Freeland and John Gray. So I would say John Gray is probably the most comparable of like talent level. Like Gray's less really talented arm, obviously out of LSU. He went to Colorado and he did have some successful years. He had a year in which he had a 3.67 ERA. He had a year in which he had a 3.84 ERA. And I think that if Chase Dolander does, that's a major success. And I think that's fully like a real possibility here because you know, we saw that Gray left and Gray obviously was better his first year in Texas. He was even good last year too. And that kind of talent can succeed, but it's just figuring it out, making it work. I think Dolander is capable of beating Coors, but I think beating Coors is like a 3.75 ERA, and that's holy crap, this guy had an awesome year. He can do that. So yeah, I like Chase Dolander. The stuff has looked really good, and I'm pretty intrigued to see what he can do and how aggressive this team gets with him, because I think they're going to get pretty aggressive. And I'm just imagining them drafting Chase Burns at 3. And those guys were teammates last year, Dolander and Burns, before Burns transferred to Wake Forest. But yeah, that could be a pretty fun duo if all worked out right.
I totally forgot about that. That's definitely a distinct possibility. Man, people would go crazy if a guy like Chase Burns went to Colorado. Twitter would burn down, or prospect Twitter would burn down. But yeah, Dolander, I just looked. He's in my top 200 right now. I can't really go much higher on him right yet, but I think you can still get him for cheap or free, depending on your league depth, because people still see that Colorado tag and just want nothing to do with him, or they'll probably be happy to get rid of him. despite his success and talent level. But yeah, I think Dolander is definitely on the rise right now, and hopefully he can limit the damage in Coors Field once he gets there in the next year or two. Last name here, the last down, we got Mike Vasile from the New York Mets. Christian Scott's pitching very well in AAA. Mike Vasile, not so much. And five starts spanning 15 and two-thirds innings. Got a 10.91 ERA, 243 whip, and as many walks as strikeouts, 12 to versus 12 in 15 and two-thirds innings. And this is a guy that, despite he had a little bit of a higher ERA last year, but pitched pretty well last year. We thought he'd be a guy that would be up, making some starts with the Mets this year, and that's probably still the case at some point this season. But yeah, Chris, it's been a really rough start to the year for Vasile.
Yeah, it sure has. Not what I expected. And he did have some bumps in the road, like after making it to AAA last year. And then to come out like this, he was knocking on the door and almost ready for a promotion, it seemed. And he's just completely fallen off. And it's been discouraging a bit to see. And I don't know, is he just toast? Can he figure it out? Yeah, it's just five starts, 15 innings. So, of course, he can get back on track. But he has 12 walks and 12 strikeouts right now. He has a 2.4 whip. That's wild. That's not good at all, by the way. He's allowing 15 hits per nine innings, which is strange to look at that number. Yeah, it hasn't been good for Mike Vasile. And any chance that he had of making that major league rotation has been a bit postponed by the fact that he's just not pitching well at all.
Yeah, and then the first one called up is going to be Christian Scott, and probably sooner rather than later. Though that rotation's been holding together so far. I thought there'd be an injury. Not yet. So we're still waiting on Scott. But yeah, Vasile, I don't think he's up to later this year. But I was never super high on him anyway. But yeah, he's been really rough to watch so far this season. But that is going to wrap us up. Thanks to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. We will be back with you again on Thursday. But until then, everyone take care.